Consider community, sustainability, and carbon neutrality at every phase of design and construction. More information at caddispc.com.
Support comes from Motus Theater, presenting Boundless Truth, Women's Stories of Freedom and Incarceration. Black women leaders who were formerly incarcerated tell autobiographical stories about the injustices within the criminal legal system. Sunday, September 19th at the Dairy Arts Center and on Zoom. More information and tickets at motustheater.org/events.
Well, good evening, everyone. This late summer Monday evening, welcome in the Opera Box. That's the best seat in the house. I'm Ron Nadel, and I'm your host. And tonight, my playlist highlights heroic women in opera, women who overcome their restricted lives, restrictions often imposed upon them, such as the clever peasant wife who stuffs her husband, the king, in a large trunk to teach him a lesson in Karl Orff's folk opera. We'll also hear them in music of Charpentier, Floyd, Mazzoli, Wolf Ferrari, and Korngold. Show some backbone and join me now in the Opera Box for tonight's Brave Women in Opera.
Getan.
Es war dein Wunsch, mein lieber Mann. Bring dieses Weib vor meine Tür, die Truhen auch, die schenk ich ihr, und das, woran ihr Herz am meisten hängt, das pack sie drein. Das sei zum Abschied ihr Geschenk.
sie den Stössel doch gefunden. Das ist die Geschichte von der klugen Frau.
When the king and his peasant wife argued about his decision in a legal matter, he angrily banished her, telling her she must leave and take only what she can fit in the large trunk. She slips a sleeping potion in his wine and stuffs him in the trunk, sending it to her hut. When he wakes up, he must acknowledge she is the cleverest one. From Orff's Die Kluge, The Clever Woman, we heard Magdalena Falevich as Die Kluge and Karlheinz Stritch as the king. Herbert Kegel conducted the Leipzig Radio Symphony. 7 minutes after 7 o'clock, and if you're just joining us, you're in the Opera Box at KGNU with Ron Nadel, and I've got a program of brave women in opera. I know when we think of operatic heroines, we instinctively think of such larger-than-life characters like Brunhilde or Tosca, Leonora, or Minnie, the girl of the Golden West, confronting dramatic, life-threatening dangers, destroying villains. Well, tonight's heroines face the subtler enemies of social convention and lack of status. These situations can be just as dramatic, or, as we heard, warmly humorous. In Ermanno Vulfarari's Susanna's Secret, a young wife goes against convention. The opera takes place early in the last century at the home of a young affluent couple, Count Gil and Countess Susanna. He suspects Susanna has been having an affair because when he came home, he could smell cigarette smoke in the house. So he determined to catch her with the lover, and he came home unexpectedly, claiming he forgot his umbrella. Again, he smelled smoke, and Susanna was flustered, but the lover had fled. He then told her he's going to his club and left. So in this final scene, Susanna heaves a sigh of relief. Taking out a pack of cigarettes, she begins to smoke. Her secret is she indulges in the pleasures of a smoke. Women aren't supposed to. Suddenly, Gil bursts in. She stands up and puts her hand behind her back. When he demands to know what's going on, she shows him the cigarette. He realizes he's been a jealous fool and apologizes, and she's sorry for having a secret. Together, they enjoy a cigarette and then slowly dance around the room in each other's arms. It's not long before their cigarettes go out and the butler enters with candles. But Gil gives Susanna an impish smile and motions to their bedroom with his head. She understands and nods. And as they leave, the butler blows out the candles.
Thank you.
Geloso!
Geloso! Nel mio volo! Perdoniamoci allora! Io più non finirò! Se tu non vuoi, sola vorrei tu! Mi trovi!
No! Fumiamo insieme!
Prendi!
Anche un'altra!
Quella di domani.
Birichina.
Ero sposo, fumerai.
Mi proverò.
Mi farai mai più geloso.
No, mia cara, fumerò.
Susanna confesses her secret to her husband. She smokes. He thought she was having an affair. They relax and enjoy a smoke in each other's company, which leads to other things. From Susanna's Secret by Ermanno Vulferari, we heard Maria Chiara as Susanna and Bernd Weichel as Gil. Lamberto Gardelli conducted the Royal Opera Orchestra. If you've just joined us, you're in the Opera Box at KGNU. I'm your host, Ron Nadel, with a playlist of brave operatic women. And be sure to stay with me after the Opera Box for a Classic Monday, where I'll have a playlist featuring music of Grazinia Bacevich and her string symphony, as well as music of Prokofiev, Barber, and Britten. That's at 8 p.m. right here on KGNU. Well, it's all well and good when a husband and wife respect each other, but this next Susanna faces small-town intolerance. The American composer Carlisle Floyd was just 29 when he wrote his opera Susanna in 1956 as a criticism of McCarthyism. Susanna is a peasant girl in a small Tennessee town living with her brother Sam. She was seen innocently bathing in a creek, nude. but the puritanical town labeled her a temptress and a threat to the men. The Baptist preacher and the congregation condemned her, demanding her to confess her sins. But she refused, saying she didn't do anything wrong. When her brother went off hunting, the preacher came by. His lust aroused, he raped her. When Sam came home, she told him what happened, because he left her alone. And in this scene from Act Two, she comes home now to find Sam gone. And then a gunshot is heard. Susanna's young friend runs in. Sam has killed the preacher. The town blames her, and they're coming to run her out of town. Susanna faces them down with a rifle. She won't leave. She's tired of being told what to do, saying, "Y'all don't care nothing about women."
Susanna, 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 Sam killed him. Sam shot the preacher while he was in the creek baptizing. He snuck up behind some bushes and nobody seen him, but we all seen him when he run away. And the preacher sank right down in the creek with a pool of blood around him. And before they could drag him out, he was dead. And he was praying real hard before he died, asking forgiveness for his sins, and asking the Lord to bless you. It was a terrible thing to hear. And the folks is coming here to get you. They say you put Sam up to it, and they say they're gonna run you out of the valley and hang Sam too if they catch him. They're a-coming, Susanna, don't you hear 'em? What you gonna do, Susanna? What you gonna do? You better run, Susanna. They're getting close, they're getting close. You better run, Susanna. You better run.
Thank you. gestures, voice of pitch, and your stay. Your mockers with their laughter, your regret to see.
Young Susanna defies the hypocritical, judgmental townfolk. She won't be told what to do anymore. From Carlisle Floyd's Susanna, with Cheryl Studer as Susanna, Ken Chester as her friend, Kent Nagano conducted the Lyon National Opera Orchestra and Chorus. It's 27 minutes after 7 o'clock. You're in the Opera Box with Ron Nadell at KGNU, and I've got a program of brave women in opera. And when we come back, another operatic character rebuked for her nudity.
Support comes from Sunshine Homeshare Colorado, a nonprofit that matches elders looking to remain in their homes with home seekers looking for affordable housing. Home sharing provides mutually beneficial effects for both the home provider and a home seeker. More at sunshinehomeshare.org. This program is supported by you, the KGNU listener member, and by Miller & Harrison, a law firm that provides assistance to people charged by the state with committing an offense and assistance to those injured by the fault of another. Located at Broadway and Mapleton in Boulder, more information can be found at millerandharrison.com or by calling 303-449-2830.
Erich Wolfgang Korngold's 1927 opera, The Miracle of Helion, was his fourth opera, and he was just 29. Helion is the wife of a cruel ruler. His stern approach alienates her, which makes him become even harsher, thinking he can force her to love him. A stranger came to the land, spreading joy among the people, earning the ruler's wrath. The stranger was arrested, and the ruler sentenced him to death. At night, Helion visited the stranger in his cell. His calm ways soothed her. He makes her feel appreciated for herself, and as they talk, she gradually disrobes until she's completely naked before him, symbolically free of the confines of her oppressive life. But she's discovered naked by the ruler and arrested for adultery. In Act Two, awaiting her trial, she explains to the ruler her behavior was not out of lust. She felt a spiritual bond of openness.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Helion, found naked with the imprisoned stranger, explains she acted not out of lust, but a spiritual bond. From The Miracle of Helion by Eric Wolfgang Korngold. And in that recording, we heard Anna Samoa Simto as Helion. John Mousery conducted the Berlin Radio Symphony. 37 minutes after 7 o'clock, Ron Nadel here with a program of brave women in opera. And this next example is based on the real life of the controversial adventuress Isabel Eberhardt. Missy Mazzoli's one-act opera, Song from the Uproar, for soloist and chorus, premiered in 2012. Isabel Eberhardt was born in Geneva, Switzerland, and lived from 1877 to 1904. During her short life, she went against convention in every way. She moved to Algiers, converted to Islam, strictly wore men's clothing, and behaved as a man. She wrote controversial and explicit literature using a man's name, and she lived openly with an Algerian soldier, Slimane Eni, taking many lovers as well. She openly smoked hashish, drank like a man, spent money recklessly. She traveled across Europe and North Africa as journalist and author. And Mazzoli's opera, like its subject, is unique. It's written as a series of numbers, illustrating certain aspects of Eberhardt's life. And the first of these numbers reflect Eberhardt's restlessness and embarking to see a new world.
Thank you.
The World Within Me is Too Small. From Song from the Uproar, music of Missy Mazzoli, with Abigail Fisher, for whom it was written, and the Now Ensemble, conducted by the composer. I'm going to conclude tonight's program of Brave Women with a selection that takes us from the unusual to the mundane, as a young woman, Louise, struggles with demands of her parents and her own emerging independence. Louise is a seamstress, and she lives in Paris with her parents and feels suffocated by them. The city provides a contrast between sophistication and bourgeois narrow-mindedness. Louise loves a young man, Julien, who lives nearby, and to Louise he represents freedom, as does the city of Paris itself. Julien has asked her to come live with him. Her parents warn her of disgrace and demand that she live with them until she marries. In this final scene, Louise tells her dismayed parents she's leaving to be with her lover. She can't stay. She needs to be her own person. Her father tries physically to restrain her, but she runs out of the house. Realizing she's gone for good, he shakes his fist at Paris itself.
Thank you. Qui s'allume. Toutes les filles sont là, on les entend crier que la danse commence et brûle les lampions et ronfle la musique. Voilà le plaisir, mesdames. On danse à crever, on rit à pleurer. Voilà.
Louise feeling confined and held back by life with her parents, can't hold back her frustration and need to be her own person, runs out of the house to be with her lover, Julien. To her working-class parents, Paris itself must be to blame. From Louise by Gustave Charpentier, we heard Iliana Kotrubas as Louise, Gabriel Bacquier as Papa, Jane Barbier as Mama, and Georges Prêtre conducting the new Philharmonie Orchestra and the Ambrosian Chorus. Well, it's coming up now on 8 o'clock. This is your host, Ron Nadel. I want to thank you all for joining me in the Opera Box this evening. But stay tuned. I'll be right back as your host for Classic Monday.
Support comes from Planet Bluegrass, presenting the Punch Brothers, featuring special guests Aoife O'Donovan and Hawktail, on September 16th in Lyons, Colorado. Ticket information for this show can be found at shop.bluegrass.com.
Con el apoyo de Raíces Brewing Company, que presenta Suave, un festival de cerveza artesanal el sábado 18 de septiembre de 12 a 6 p.m. en Steam on the Platte en Denver. Suave es una celebración de comunidad, cultura y cerveza latina en la que se presentarán cervecerías artesanales latinas, camiones de comida, actuaciones musicales de Mono Verde, Los Mocochetes y más. Boletos y más información en suavefest.com.
Support comes from Sunshine Homeshare Colorado, a nonprofit that matches elders looking to remain in their homes with home seekers looking for affordable housing. Home sharing provides mutually beneficial effects for both the home provider and a home seeker. More at sunshinehomeshare.org.
Well, good evening and welcome to A Classic Monday. I'm still your host, Ron Nadel. And for the next 2 hours, I have a bouquet of classical music for a summer night, starting with music of the French Baroque composer Marin Marais. Sergei Prokofiev's first piano concerto. Samuel Barber's Essays for Orchestra. Polish composer Grażyna Bacewicz, Symphony for Strings. Benjamin Britten conducting his serenade for tenor, horn, and strings. Well, we're going to begin with the music of Marin Marais and the Bells of St. Genevieve. The French composer Marin Marais was born in Paris and lived from 1656 to 1728. He was a master of the viol de gamba, which is a member of the string orchestra that is played like a cello between the legs. In fact, viol de gamba means viol of the legs. And he wrote no less than 5 books of pieces for that instrument. His Bells of St. Genevieve was composed in 1723, and it's written for violin, viol de gamba, harpsichord, and basso continuo. It's basically in the form of a passacaglia, a repeated bass line, which is contrasted by the main melodic line. And Marin has the viol de gamba and the violin taking turns as the lead. The Bells of St. Genevieve.